Sharing evidence-based information with others, including lay people and colleagues during the COVID-19 pandemic, is an important ethical duty and moral obligation for nurses. Let's talk about the crucial importance of learning and disseminating evidence-based data in the age of COVID-19 on the special bonus episode of The Nurse Keith Show. Hello and welcome to the Nurse Keith Show. I'm privileged to have the opportunity to use this platform to educate and inform you, the Nurse Keith Nation, so that you can take any information you find useful and share it with those you care about. I'm committed to regularly publishing episodes related solely to the COVID-19 pandemic. These episodes will always be free of corporate sponsorship and advertising of my business. This is solely about education and information as a public service, so please share far and wide if you feel these episodes are a valuable approach to the virus. And the show notes for this episode will be at nursekeith.com/evidence. And remember that all information in these episodes about the pandemic use the most up-to-date information I can access, as well as the personal opinions and reactions from yours truly and my guests. Note that the situation is changing and mutable, and anything we share today or in any other episode might be different by the time we go to press and may change as new evidence emerges. And please note that nothing shared in the course of these episodes is intended for diagnosis or treatment. Please consult your healthcare provider, the CDC, the WHO, your local health department, or any other evidence-based resource you trust. And if you hear something shared on this episode or any episode that you think was erroneous or misguided, shoot me an email at keith@nursekeith.com with any evidence or data or facts you have, and I'll read through that and then post a public correction. Thanks for understanding. Stay safe and keep informed. And today I am joined by my dear friend and colleague, a nurse entrepreneur and clinician named Amelia Roberts. Amelia, thanks for being here.
Hey there, Keith. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for having me. We are here on Zoom smiling at each other. And you and I did a Facebook Live the other day, which I will reference in the show notes. And we talked all about different aspects of what's going on in the world right now. And it is it's a bizarre and interesting and chaotic time, isn't it?
Agreed.
Yeah.
Yes.
And Amelia, you work with nurses who feel under-recognized, and they hire you to help them stand out from the crowd, especially nurse business owners, right? And
yes.
You're also a clinician, correct?
Yes. Yes. I wear a couple hats.
You wear many hats, right? So, you know, in the context of what's going on in the world right now, what do you do around trying to maintain your sanity around how much information there is, and how do you know where to go to trust what it is that you're reading, listening to, consuming, or watching? And then how do you know what to share with other people and what not to share?
Wow. A lot of questions, and I'm going to have you keep me honest to answering all of them.
Well, it's cool. But, no worries. We're easy here.
So, how am I keeping sane? I am finding the need to minimize, you know, the amount of information that I'm plugged into.
Yes.
Because I can constantly consume, and it's, you know, that's not great. That's not healthy. You have to be balanced. And at the same time, I can't put my head in the sand. For various reasons. I work at a hospital a few days a week, 2 to 3 days a week. I'm actually inside of a facility. The rest that I am working from home. So I need to know as I go out and I'm around people, you know, things to keep in mind and whatnot and blah, blah, blah. So I am trying to limit my intake, specifically when it comes to like certain information. I'm trying to make sure that it's from .edu websites in particular, and other sources I try to take with a grain of salt, looking for their references, hoping that they do link to a .gov or .edu or .org. So that's also how. As far as you asked me a few questions and I forgot.
I'm sorry, I shouldn't have led with so many questions. So yeah, it was the next question really, and the last question in that series of questions that I barraged you with was, you know, how do you know what to share and what not to share and with whom? Because I'm sure colleagues come to you, family, friends, maybe members of your church or whatever. People come to you and you're like, Amelia, I don't know what to think. So how do you know how to parse what you know and share it carefully with each person who comes to you with questions or concerns?
Sure. So publicly, you know, so one, it's public knowledge that I'm a registered nurse. So because of that, I can't share every funny meme that I see. It might be obvious to your listeners, but for those who's like, why can't you share every funny meme? Well, because some people may not understand that it's a joke, that I'm sharing it in jest, or I'm sharing it to be sarcastic. Some people might really say like, oh my goodness, this nurse shared this, so it must be true. I have that in the back of my head. So when I do share information, if it's something in joke, I explicitly say that this is a joke or whatnot. But I don't necessarily share like a ton of, you know, funny stuff. I don't really, for me, I use social media for professional use to enhance my career, to help grow my business. So the content that I'm sharing is not necessarily, you know, geared towards, you know, the funny and laughs and stuff. So with content that I am sharing about COVID and, you know, what's going on, I do make sure that the source is evidence-based, meaning if there is a trial and if Stanford University is running a trial, or if they're doing a test where they are testing all people in a certain town, no matter if they're symptomatic or not, I think that's of interest to put out there. And my goal with sharing that sort of content wouldn't necessarily be to talk to, you know, stir up any discussions, but really to help people get to think, wow, here is an area that's wanting to test the asymptomatic. I wonder why. And, you know, hopefully that would, you know, spark a conversation or spark thoughts or interest or talk. Yep, I've always been super selective, but especially now, just because of all that's happening, I have to be even more careful about what I do put out there.
Well said. Okay, so I want to unpack that a little bit. So I agree with you. I also go for the evidence-based stuff, and we can even talk about some of the places we go for our information. So we'll talk about that. Now, when you were talking about like being cautious about what you share, what I hear, you know, at the top of the show, what I mentioned is I said we have an ethical duty and a moral obligation as nurses to answer questions and be present as disseminators of information to whoever comes to us. And we're nurses, so people trust us. So we can expect people are going to come to us with questions, whether it's like the local shop owner who we know, or it's our nephew or our aunt or anybody coming to us, right? So what I heard from you without you saying the word is responsibility. Like you are aware of your responsibility as a nurse. That's what I heard. Is that right?
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. And then when you mentioned the memes are interesting because there's some funny stuff going around, and you know how nurses love gallows humor. Like we love the stuff that touches, like it's almost a little edgy, but as nurses, it's one of the ways we kind of like blow off steam in a way. ER nurses have this very funny sense of humor.
Very interesting sense of humor.
Yeah. And that's cool. That's cool. In my social media feeds that I use for my business, like for Nurse Keith and Nurse Keith Coaching, I share some funny stuff, but I'm actually not sharing memes. What I'm doing is I'll like take a picture of my cat, George, because people love George the cat. And I'll like put a caption in like, you know, something like, you know, here's George the cat relaxing on Earth Day. You know, he'd love if you sent him some sardines. Do you know what I mean? Like something funny just to entertain and provide a light moment. And then in my Instagram stories as a public figure, I will do a little video while I'm out biking. I'll take a break and just chat. And sometimes it'll be funny or just a thought, or sometimes it'll be fairly serious. But I'm very cautious, and often on my Instagram feed, in my stories for my business, I'll share like pictures of flowers or pretty places in Santa Fe and just say, this is how I took care of myself today. I went for a bike ride and here's this beautiful place I went to in Santa Fe. So I see my responsibility as a public figure as well to inform and educate. But I also go for a slight hint of entertainment, but not superfluous or frivolous entertainment, but kind of like a moment of relief. Like, oh, there's George. Isn't he cute? Right. And like just that moment of, oh, I love George the cat. Right. Mm-hmm. So, but in the, what I share in terms of COVID-19 is pretty darn serious. And I'm really cautious about what I share. And the other thing I heard from you, you said you were sharing stuff to get people to think. And what I see that as, you're an intellectually curious person, Amelia. I get that about you. And I think you're trying to spark others' curiosity. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. That is the goal. Because, and, you know, spark conversation, you know, depending on some circles, because it really depends on the circle too, because I have, I have my personal Facebook feed, which is really, is professional. It's not necessarily a lot of family and friends, different conversation for a different day.
I see.
But there are certain groups that I'm in that, you know, I'll share stuff in the group that I wouldn't necessarily put on my personal feed that the public can share.
Got it.
Yeah.
Got it. Yeah. My personal Facebook feed, which before COVID, I would only look at like or post on once a month. Mm-hmm. I didn't pay much attention to it because I'm busy working. But during COVID, I'm posting some evidence-based things or pieces of news I think will be informative to my friends and family, and also the colleagues, the few colleagues I'm connected with on my personal feed. Mm. And I don't add a lot of people to my personal feed these days because I just don't have time. But but that's where I share some funny things, like funny videos and things that I think are tasteful and will just be a moment of relief for my circle, my social circle. But on my personal, on my professional stuff, it's a different animal. And some nurses out there, and I think you know some of them, I'm sure you do, are not public figures as in they don't have businesses, they're not nurse entrepreneurs, but they do have maybe an Instagram feed that's about being a nurse. And doesn't it change? Like, what changes when you decide to have a social media feed that represents you as a nurse and not just as like a person?
I feel like the word responsibility comes in again, right? Because if you, you know, have a feed, because, okay, so it's well known that nurses are like the most trusted profession, right? Like year after year, it's like we rank above.
Yeah.
Oh goodness. Clergy. Yeah. Clergy even.
Everybody.
And, you know, doctors and whatnot. So there's that. So when you go from being just the average person, you know, average Jane or Joe to, putting that profession around your persona, everything that you say now goes through that filter of, oh, well, they're a nurse. And so you have a certain level of trust that people will give you, whether or not you've earned it or not, you know, whether or not, you know, there's all sorts of people who can manage to pass the NCLEX. Let's be completely honest.
Okay. Got it.
It's a judge of NCLEX. It's a judge of minimum competency, right? So, people who can manage to pass and have those credentials. Okay. But, the fact is, no matter what we see as professionals behind that, we may not be easily impressed because we're in the profession. People who are outside of our profession and see that, they elevate it, whether it's due or not, to a certain level. So therefore, leading with the fact that you have these credentials and you are a nurse, you have to be so very, very careful about what you say. And yes, it absolutely has changed from, you know, just the week before when you were a lay person and just posted about various types of things.
Good point. And, you know, while we're talking about social media and the responsibility of making yourself a public figure, now, there are some nurses out there who shall remain nameless, whose social media feeds to me seem extremely frivolous, even in the time of COVID. And Some frivolousness in play is awesome. I engage in some myself, as I said. And there's also some organizations out there on, let's say, Instagram, who it seems like every single post they put out is a meme. And I'm not quite sure why they do it. Like, are they doing it for clickbait? Are they just doing it to like get eyeballs? Because it doesn't seem like it has a purpose other than entertainment or getting people to see their stuff. Does that seem cynical to you in any way?
You know what? It's funny. So I may not be the best person to ask that because as a digital native, I use MySpace and Ringo and different stuff, photo sharing and commenting tools from middle school to high school-ish. So I grew up using social media as a communication tool. It's used as a tool to connect with people and develop relationships and, you know, could stay connected with friends and have conversations. So the use of social media as just, you know, posting like almost like a billboard, you know, just posting stuff and not really having things that are engaging and incite conversation, or I'm unfamiliar with that use. So
I see.
I can't really speak to that. Also, as it's interesting, as a business owner, when I studied marketing and I started to study brands that have done well financially, they too choose to use social media as a communication tool, a way to facilitate back and forth, a way to share about what the company is about and what the company is doing, and curiosity about their audience, their customers, about what their customers are doing, what their customers are interested in. Or are you interested, you know, in A or B? There's a dialogue going. So I really don't have much good to say about people who do just post meme after meme after meme on any, you know, form of social media, because I don't consider that being social.
Thank you. Right. That's the billboard style. I get it. Yeah. So let's back up just like 30 seconds or 60 seconds. You use the term digital native. I know what it means, but I'm sure there's someone out there saying, what does she mean by digital native? Can you please explain to anyone out there who doesn't get that concept or term?
Sure. It's digital native. If someone were to Google it, they probably have a whole nother definition, but beyond what I'm about to say. But as somebody who started using social media or digital tools, email, very early in age, like a native speaker of Spanish, you know, like when did they start learning Spanish versus somebody who learned Spanish as an adult? I remember my brother playing video games, you know, handheld video games. I must have been like 4 or 5. I just remember him, you know, that thing going off and blah, blah, blah. So it was like my first introduction to technology and using technology and playing games on the computers, you know, elementary school. So that's what I mean by digital native.
Got it. That's exactly how I would define it. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to ask you how old you are.
Okay. But
I'm going to age myself. I'm very honest about my age. I'm 55. And I can say that when I was, 10, maybe around 1973 or 4, whatever the year was where Pong came out, that very, very first game you could plug into your TV and play this very slow game of like ping pong. We had it when it first came out. My dad bought it. So was my first introduction to tech. And my mother and father-in-law gave us like an Apple IIe. Remember those bulky apples that were kind of like these big rectangles? You know, they're kind of cool looking, actually. They look like something out of 2001, A Space Odyssey. But they gave us one of those in the like 94 or so, 95, maybe something like that. And then we started getting into email and the internet around that time. And I was in nursing school at the time, getting my ADN. So my son was born in 83. He's now 37 he's going on 37. He's not a digital native, but he started using this stuff in high school, junior high and high school. So he's not a native to it. So the kids that are younger came in after him, started using this stuff as like in elementary school. And now kids start using it before they're even in preschool. So it's interesting to watch the gradations. And I embraced it full force. And I've been really pretty deep into digital media since the late 90s, pretty much. Mm. And so it's interesting to watch how we all respond to it and how we all utilize it. And now we watch much older people in their 80s and 90s, mm. like using Facebook and stuff. And it's interesting to watch them, sometimes entertaining. So, so getting back to this responsibility in how we approach media, now we have, we don't just have blogs. Like I started blogging in 2005, but we have blogs, podcasts, tons of social media, and new platforms emerging all the time, right? Like TikTok is on my radar, but I have no clue what it is yet. I haven't checked it out because I just don't have time. But yeah. I'm fascinated. I want to know. I just don't have time. So when you're using all these different platforms as a public figure and as a healthcare professional, when you're going to decide, I'm going to put something out there, do you sometimes think to yourself, why am I doing this? Like, what's my purpose? Or is that ingrained in you as a digital native, knowing that there's a purpose?
That's a good question, because it's like I have like a couple hats when I publish information. I do have, you know, who I am as Amelia, and then who I am as Amelia, the business owner. Mm-hmm. But they are, I mean, I guess it is sort of like one of the same. So to be quite honest, it's like I have like a, do have like a specific goal that like under, like my driving theme is to help people live an optimal life.
Okay.
That's what I care about. Whether in order to do that, they need to maybe pivot their career, or in order to have an optimal life, they need a business that takes care of them, runs a little easier, is easier for them to get clients and customers and revenue, or optimal life, health and wellness. So any case, is there's a few, there's lots of different topics that all can be connected to the theme of helping humans live their optimal life and function at their highest level of functioning.
Yeah.
So that sort of like is, you know, who I am as a person, no matter what hat I have on at the time. So that is sort of something that I am thinking about when I do publish. It's like, is this, would this be incongruent with that goal? And guess what? I typically want to publish stuff that's congruent with that.
Me too. Yeah. Even as an individual, when I'm posting on my personal Facebook feed. So now that we've covered, we've laid the groundwork of what it's like to have a digital life as a person, as a business owner, and or as a healthcare professional slash nurse. So now let's turn to the pandemic. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I've embraced like being an educator of people about the pandemic in my private life and in my public life as a nurse and as an entrepreneur, as a business owner. And so people turn to me in all of those capacities every day, 7 days a week, whether it's family, friends, colleagues, members of my local community. Sometimes people I don't even know. Nurses write me from all over the country and the world right now, saying, what the heck do I think? So let's talk about, if you don't mind, as we mentioned earlier, as we have another, you know, 15 or 20 minutes to go, where do you turn specifically? You said .edu and .gov sites for COVID-19 mm-hmm. information. Mm-hmm. What are some of your go-tos? I just want to know Amelia's go-tos.
Okay, so John Hopkins is something I would say. John Hopkins.
Great.
Stanford University.
Good one.
And if I have a third, I would say, goodness gracious, a few others come to mind. And I'll say this with a caveat. I do monitor CNN, MSN.
Yep.
And Washington Post. However,
got it.
When I'm looking at their articles and they quote and they make specific or make statistics or they quote statistics or make quotes or say, I'm always looking at who the reference. I'm always looking at who they're quoting and who they're referencing. And you know, if those don't tick the right boxes, you know, in my head as I'm reading that article, then I'll stop reading and I'll throw it out. So I don't want people to think, oh, Amelia believes everything that CNN or MSN or, no, I don't believe everything they say or take it with, you know, take it, I take those things.
Right.
So yeah, so I look at those sources and, you know, do my own due diligence and from there. But information that has been, you know, very reliable and I don't have to do all that much work with, would be the ones that I had mentioned. But of course, I mean, you have like the Mayo Clinics and Cleveland Clinics, and definitely they're great. As far as like pediatric, for folks who have kids, Children's National, Washington, D.C., yes, they are working very, very hard.
Oh, that's a good one.
To make sure that their information is up to date and accurate.
I like that.
Yeah, that's sort of it. Because I am part of that will remain nameless, because I am part of a nameless hospital, a pretty large hospital, we do get curated information that they send out to employees, which is, you know, some people say like, oh, I want to leave my, you know, nursing job or my healthcare job. Well, they're committed to making sure that their employees are educated and can also disseminate accurate information to the families that ask, or people who send emails or who ask questions. So they want to make sure that we can, you know, share and disseminate, right, accurate information. So
exactly.
So lots of great stuff that has been curated and shared to employees as well. So that's also probably why I'm kind of slow with, you know, when you ask me that question with naming specific names, because I am being sent amazing articles because of my day job.
I love that. Wow. That is really perfect. That is really great. And I'm so glad you touched on all those points. So you mentioned due diligence, checking references, not just swallowing everything you hear or read or see just because someone with some authority said it or recorded it or promulgated some particular piece of information. If promulgated is the right word, I think it is. So, right. Your employer, if you have a reliable employer who you trust, I mean, of course, they're going to be disseminating information. And you can be, I guess, the term I think of is like critical thinking and reading, listening, and watching with a critical ear or a critical eye. And I think that's kind of where I come from in that particular regard. And when you said CNN, Washington Post, and you said MSN, do you mean MSNBC?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, MSNBC. Yeah. Okay. So I've done an experiment. I'll be really honest, the last 5 weeks, and I've actually been sharing this publicly.
Okay.
I have not watched TV or listened to the radio, except for a couple snippets of NPR here and there in the morning when I'm making coffee, for 5 weeks. And I wanted to see basically if it would lower my level of anxiety. Even though I love MSNBC and I like CNN and I listen to NPR and I listen or watch Democracy Now!, which is a very left-wing progressive news organization out of New York, I found that stuff can still hype me up, because even if it's NPR, MSNBC, it can still get you hyped up because, well, one thing, watching MSNBC or CNN, one of the pieces of cognitive dissonance that I experience is I'm watching this awesome piece with Anderson Cooper or Rachel Maddow, right? And then they're talking about this really deep stuff about people who died and, you know, things in Italy or Spain or whatever. And then all of a sudden they go to a Chevrolet truck commercial and I'm like, oh, I can't stand it. And I always mute commercials. That's been a lifelong practice of mine. But it's sort of, in a way, for me, just me personally, this isn't a judgment on anyone who watches TV. For me, it cheapens it, because I was deep into this story about death and dying and compassion. And all of a sudden I'm shaken by this Chevy commercial. And I just, like, my brain just cannot process, because I want to stay with the feeling from the story. But all of a sudden this other image or sound comes on and I'm shaken from where I was intellectually or emotionally. So I've taken this break. And I've been really, really careful what I'm consuming. And it's really been working for me. So I have like 5 go-to podcasts, many of which, some of which focus exclusively on COVID, and some of which touch on COVID regularly, but not maybe every episode. And then I have certain websites I go to and certain social media feeds that I go to specifically. Like I'll go onto LinkedIn, there's certain people I follow who I know always post really awesome, great information about the pandemic. People I really, really trust, like implicitly. they're often professors and, you know, leaders in nursing and healthcare. Mm-hmm. And then I have a couple websites I go to. So that's how I've been curating information. And I love that you use the word curation. I'm curating for my audience and friends and family, but I'm also curating for myself. So that's where sanity comes in for me here. What do you think about that?
Yes. And
I'll share right now if you want. Yeah.
Well, what I think about it, one, I want you to share and share the folks that you're following. Yeah. Another thing about when I said MSNBC and CNN and whatnot. I don't watch CNN. it's the website. Their website is like, I too, with CNN, with watching, there's just too much going on the screen. It's like they're interviewing people and then there's like several banners going on underneath of it. So I don't actually watch it. It's just a lot. So, and TV in general, the same. I really do get a lot of my information from websites versus, TV.
What I'll see is like CNN and MSNBC, it's like some of those clips you can find on YouTube without commercials. So if you want to see an interview that Anderson Cooper did with Anthony Fauci, you can find it on YouTube and just watch the interview with Anthony Fauci and no commercials and all that stuff. So there are ways to find stuff from Rachel Maddow, you know, CNN, Anderson Cooper, whoever, the people you like, the hosts you like. Mm-hmm. And kind of skip the TV part. And it's just the way it is. And sometimes those videos will be on their websites too. So in terms of like news, I have a subscription to the New York Times. And the New York Times COVID-19 coronavirus pandemic coverage is, in my experience, very, very good. So all of their information, all of the reporting on the pandemic is free to everyone in the world. So it's nytimes.com/coronavirus. So I find their reporting very, very good, and I do trust them. And they have an excellent podcast called The Daily. It comes out every morning around 4 a.m. It's usually 20 to 25 minutes on one story. So recently, and I'll try to remember to put this in the show notes, it was 24 hours in a Brooklyn hospital, and they had one journalist embedded with a team at this Brooklyn hospital for 24 hours.
Wow.
And she had deep access to patients and professionals who were willing to be interviewed on the radio. So they do these powerful, very focused stories. So I love The Daily because it's just very, the people they interview are just top notch. There's the podcasts I listen to right now. One is called America Dissected Coronavirus. It's from the people at crooked.com who do Pod Save America. It is very, very progressive for people to know that. And they are doing some excellent interviews. I'm also listening to Coronavirus Fact Versus Fiction, and that is actually Sanjay Gupta. So it's pretty good. And then I'm also listening to my friend Ted O'Connell, who was on my podcast not long ago. I'll have a link to his coronavirus podcast. And then there's a couple internal medicine podcasts I love. One is called Clinical Problem Solvers, and they are medical residents who interview like these amazing doctors and residents and scientists. And the other one is called the Curbsiders Internal Medicine Podcast. So that's where I go, even for other internal medicine stuff. Like if you want to learn about nephrology, they'll do an amazing nephrology piece. And it's a great way to learn rather than reading an article. So if you learn in auditorily, it's a great way to just like say, oh, I want to listen to their episode about arterial blood gases. And you can just dive deep for 45 minutes, which to some people might sound like, really? But yeah, it's great.
Yeah, that sounds awesome.
Yeah. And now for other information, I go to LinkedIn, and there's a couple people I really, really love and respect. One is named Dr. Bonnie Clipper.
Oh, yes.
She is a medical technology enthusiast, and I trust Bonnie so much. Mm. Dr. Bonnie Clipper posts really good stuff, so I follow her very, very closely. There's other people whose names are escaping me right now. I mean, Dr. Renee Thompson, who I think you know, she's wonderful. She's our friend at the Healthy Workforce Institute. And then there's some other people here who I go to, and I'm going to have to put all their information in the show notes, because I don't have a list like right in front of me, but I know who they are because they're the people I go to on a regular basis. The other thing I do is I follow organizations like you said, Johns Hopkins, Stanford, Children's National is going to have to go on my list, Mayo, Cleveland Clinic. So those are the ones I focus on too, is these like highly respected organizations. And then I'm also following some nursing associations and nursing organizations. So do you have any that you particularly look to or follow for guidance?
When it comes to nursing organizations, to be honest, and I could be wrong, and I'm happy to, you know, reevaluate, but when it has come to huge things that has affected lots of nurses, like nurses play cards, right? That whole thing. And nurses and stuff. There are large nursing organizations who have been super silent.
Right.
Who haven't really said too much. And that sort of has impacted my view of trustworthiness.
Yes.
And so even now I'm, you know, paying attention to certain things, but to answer your question, there isn't one specific nursing organization that's been on my radar as, you know, someone that I really need to be able to follow, but I'm always open to learning. I mean, is there a nursing organization that's standing out and speaking out and sharing lots of great stuff? Tell me, who am I missing? Who I need to take a look at?
Well, I'm very biased, but I'm on the board of the New Mexico Nurses Association, and our executive director, Dr. Deborah Walker, is an amazing person. She's worked in the Senate, in the House, as a lobbyist and as a nurse lobbyist, and also as an aide to various government officials over the years. So she has a real Washington insider's view of legislation and how things are looked at through a certain lens. So she shares a lot of things with our inner community of the NMNA. And so I look to her as a leader who I trust. And that's really within our little ecosystem of the New Mexico Nurses Association. So that's an organization that is dear to my heart. I'm on the board and I trust what comes out of Deborah's mouth and from her computer. I've been looking at the ANA website for their coronavirus COVID-19 resources, and there's some good stuff here. I haven't dug too deeply into it, but I'm making the assumption that this is all good stuff, but I haven't looked at it in a really deep way. And I'll say the New Mexico Nurses Association is one of those state nursing organizations that's tied to the ANA, but I'm not particularly tuned in. And I would be interested to look more deeply at the Association of Critical Care Nurses, for instance. That's an organization that I've always respected. Not that I am a critical care nurse, but they're people who I do respect. And I think it's a very highly regarded organization. I'm not tuned in to what they're putting out on COVID-19, but I'm looking at their website right now, aacn.org, and they have COVID-19 updates and resources you can sign up for. So I'd be very interested to see. What I'm seeing right here, I'll just mention, I'm at AACN right now, and here's our intellectual curiosity, Amelia. They have a section called Procedure Manual COVID-19 Resources for how to deal with high acuity, progressive, and critical care patients. They have pocket cards downloadable for free, which are quick and convenient pocket cards with the latest clinical information that may be useful when caring for COVID-19 patients. So that's fascinating to me. They have a section on moral distress in times of crisis. They have a section on keeping COVID-19 acute cardiovascular effects top of mind. And they have something on how nurse managers can mitigate nurse PTSD.
Oh, wow. That sounds amazing.
And they also have a section on ARDS, you know, acute respiratory distress syndrome, COVID-19, and pronation therapy. Have you heard about pronation therapy?
I have not.
This is where, and any of you critical care nurses out there, my friends in ICUs all over the country, correct me if I'm wrong, it's where they put them prone on the tummy and then they turn them.
Yes, flat on the tummy. Yeah. Take off the burden on the lungs for work helps with that. Yeah.
Right. And they have these things called roto beds that turn them side to side. So there's a lot about that. And I'm also hearing tell of information about, what's the word? It's convalescent plasma, where they're taking plasma from people who have antibodies to COVID-19 and then infusing it into people who are infected. Have you heard about that?
I have heard about that.
Fascinating to me. And there's an interview that can be heard here on my show with an amazing nurse manager and a infectious disease professional from a hospital, Friedert Medical Center near Milwaukee. And they were talking about convalescent plasma and how they need to make sure there's enough antibodies in the plasma to make it worth infusing in the first place. So there's some interesting stuff out there. And what would be your takeaway here as we wind down? For a nurse listening saying, which of these places should I go and how do I judge what's best for me? What would you say to that woman or man asking that question right now?
So besides the websites we've given, generally speaking, .edu websites, ones that are connected to educational facilities tend to be really great for those who decide to get interested into SEO. If you have a link that's connected to a .edu website, that gives you lots of good Google juice or juju. people think highly of that. So that could be a great place to start. We named some universities and colleges here on the webs on just during this conversation. And, this is definitely a time that I would encourage nurses to think about sharing what they know, right? We are the holders of lots of evidence-based practice. We're the holders of lots of information that the public doesn't necessarily have. And for those who do wish to have their voice heard on a larger scale, folks are looking for experts. They are lay people who didn't know that this was going to happen. And they have audiences, they have digital stages, and they're looking for experts to come on and educate their audience on what's happening, things that they need to be aware of. And I feel like this is a great time for nurses who decide to share their expertise to really get themselves out there and start to help a lot of people.
Good point. And, in your work at thebusinessofnursing.com and solutionsbyamelia.com, you help experts like, say, myself, a nurse who wants to get out there on live video feeds and podcasts and virtual conferences where we can share our wisdom and information and be seen and act as experts in the world. You help nurses like myself, public figures, or those of us who want to become public figures, get out there in public, right? That's part of what you do.
Yeah.
Right. And that's really cool. And you also teach people like registered nurses or nurse entrepreneurs how to use social media, like you said, for something beyond watching cat videos. Although I do share a lot of stuff about George the cat because people just love George and he's part of my brand and people love George. Please send sardines, he says. Now, you live in what area of the country?
Washington, D.C. area, Maryland.
The D.C., the greater D.C. area, right?
Yeah.
And you said that when you're not slaying obscurity, you can find Amelia planning real and imagined food tours. So sounds like you're a foodie person.
Oh, most definitely. I was doing food tours and planning them back when GPS, the GPS was a separate unit and that you had to put up in a car and MapQuest. So yeah, printing out MapQuest directions to various restaurants and how they connected to one another. When I visited a friend in Austin, Texas, flew out there.
Yeah,
and it goes back.
Wow. Well, maybe we can go out to dinner in D.C. next time I'm there, or if you ever get to the Southwest, we can do some New Mexican food here in New Mexico. And it would be nice to tuck into a nice meal with you someday. That would be fun.
That would be lovely.
And I really appreciate you being here and sharing your wisdom because you understand social media. You understand what it means to be responsible as a healthcare provider and a public figure. Like, how do I navigate this particular world during this pandemic? So thank you for all the wisdom you shared.
And thank you. You're
amazing. Oh. And there'll be links to all your stuff in the show notes at nursekeith.com/evidence. And there'll be links to all your social media where people can check you out. And I recommend people get in touch with you because you're just an awesome person.
Oh, thank you so much, Keith. And so are you. You know, there's so many people out there that our paths cross with, and you're somebody that I definitely like to have in my circle for all that you do for other people and all that people say about you. And it's all true, you guys.
I paid her very, very well for this, by the way. Well, thank you, Amelia. You're the best.
So, thank you so much. You take care.
Well, there you have it. Thanks for listening to this special COVID-19 bonus episode of the Nurse Keith Show. There'll be many more to come. Please head over to nursekeith.com/evidence to see a lot of the stuff we shared today, including links to Amelia so you can find her on social media and her websites. I hope you feel uplifted and empowered and educated by this episode, and take inspired action every day to educate, inform, and calm your friends, family, loved ones, colleagues, and members of your community. The Nurse Keith Show is adroitly produced by Rob Johnston of 520R Podcasting, and Mark Cappy-Speeson is our stalwart social media ringmaster, and I cannot thank Rob and Mark enough for helping me get the word out on all of our channels because of all these amazing guests like Amelia Roberts who are coming to the Nurse Keith Show to share their wisdom. Stay safe, stay informed, and be the nurse who does the right thing in the face of COVID-19. This is Nurse Keith saying adios till next time from beautiful Santa Fe, New Mexico.